me, is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Thank you.
Welcome, welcome back. I know you guys have been listening, and we have a super, super special legend here with us who's influenced the careers of many of the people that we've talked to.
Oh, yeah.
To have him here today, Travis is able to make it happen. So, Travis, tell us who's here with us today.
Man, this is the man. Without this man, I don't know where I would be. This is Dr. Charles Collins.
Yes.
Psychiatrist, yes. Mentor. You know, he just made it happen for so many of us at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. And we're so happy to have him. Thank you, Dr. Collins, for taking the time.
Oh, thank you very much. That's quite an introduction. Thank you so very much.
We appreciate it.
It's sort of nice to hear that, because it gives me, like, I had a purpose, you know, for meeting you all and knowing you, Dr. Howard. I think that was so important for me in life, to know I may have touched somebody. So that's important. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
You touched more than just Travis. A lot of people that we've talked to, a lot of people we haven't talked to.
And yeah.
You're a legend, so we appreciate you making the time.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Well, before you became a legend, though, you got to take us back to medical school. Tell us, what was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
Well, I think the toughest class was probably, I think, anatomy. I think the other stuff was, I kind of handled that. And I'm not sure if I was dyslexic or whatever was going on at that time. Because I was getting things backwards and, you know, whatever. So, but I got it.
It all sounds the same.
Like, what are you doing? Particularly when they gave an exam, then they changed the orientation of the cadaver or something, you know? And that really messed me up. So that was probably the hardest class.
That instructor sounds a little bit, you know, like they tried to trip you up.
They did. Because I remember going for one of the tests we had, they actually suspended, you know, one of the legs. And so that gives you a whole new way of looking at something. If you remember in the supine position or something, that was it. And I said, uh-huh. Oh, my God, what are they doing to me here? You know, that was the hardest. But, you know, one of the harder things actually was the fact that, you know, I was married at that time and we were expecting a baby, my daughter. And that ended up being one of the more challenging things, because of, you know, trying to get through the, you know, this school and then trying to make sure that my wife and baby were on the way. It was really quite extraordinary. I'm not sure how that happened. It was almost a blessing that I got through that. So that was the hardest. The neuroscience block, I think Cassie came right in February, which we were right in the middle of all that. And it went fine. I think I probably lost about 10 pounds or so. But she was born and everything was good. So
yeah,
you know, it's a blessing. This reminds me, Dr. Collins. I remember, because I got married, it was during finals week. And yeah. I think I had a neuroanatomy, neurobehavior. I had an exam and I got married that week, and I think I talked to you about it.
And yeah.
You inspired me. You're like, man, I did it. You could do it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
That's so funny.
And you know, but when I was in medical school, it was sort of, you know, it was back in the 1980s. And it was another pressure there of, actually, we only had, it was a class of 150. There were only five African-Americans in the class. Oh, so wow. It was a lot of stuff going on internally, because it wasn't like a lot of support. And it was not, you know, we finally kind of got together as a group, but it was a very stressful time socially as well. I had my wife, but that time was a kind of awkward time. And I think that's the part that, you know, in later years, it kind of drove me to sort of be of some help to some students, because for me, it was a very rough time. So that part was rough. The academics were not hard for me, But that part was, you know, having that kind of pressure to kind of succeed in a pretty interesting environment. That's all I can say.
Do you have any like particular stories or something to kind of like just tell us that may have happened or may have been particularly tough at that time?
Well, I didn't really know. But one thing, the school, I went to school here in Ohio at the Medical College of Ohio at Toledo. And one of the things that kind of scared me were the number of people that were repeating classes, right? So as a you know, person coming in, I'm looking, I said, what is going on around here where folks were repeating? So that kind of shocked me in a way. Mm-hmm. As the like, why, what happened? I just didn't want to be in that situation. So that's what I mean, that was stressful, knowing that people had failed things and there was not a lot of effort to make them do better or whatever. That's what I mean. So that's the kind of thing that happened. And being, and particularly being at that time, people weren't not that friendly either. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any social things going on at all. So it was a very isolated period of time.
And you couple that with the pressure to succeed. Just, you know, maybe you're the first in your family, you're the first in your city, you know, you're one of five, and you don't want to be the last one. Nobody know how. I had to succeed. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, you got a baby on the way? Yeah, that's crazy.
It was crazy.
Wow. But, well, take us back. Take us back to where you're from. Where did you grow up and where's your family from?
Well, I'm from, and this is interesting. I've written this down a couple of times for other reasons, but I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and I attended the Cleveland public school system. And I had an interesting upbringing because most of my life, I was raised with my grandparents, Oscar and Nellie Collins. And then later, my mom kind of got in the picture, right? And so, but what was interesting about them were they both were from the South. They were old grandparents, like they were older than me in a way now being grandparents, but we were young and my mother was out and about and they took care of us. And one of the things, my grandfather being, really from sharecropping background in Chattanooga, Tennessee, mm-hmm. he used to just sit down to me and talk about being a physician. He wanted me to go to Meharry Medical School. I heard this one in like his lap when I'm 4, 5, and 6 years old.
Wow.
So he's talking to me constantly about, I need to be a doctor, because I told him I wanted to be an astronaut. And he explained to me, this is back in 1960, okay, that was all fake. And that was not happening. They were playing mind tricks on me. That's exactly what he said. He said, you need to get a real job. I'll never forget that.
Well, he has a foresight. There are movies and there are series based on that premise.
That's funny. You know, he probably, you know, we kind of did an episode talking about like the history of like African-American, you know, medical schools. And there used to be a bunch in Tennessee. I wonder if he kind of understood that there was like a lot of schools that kind of got shut down, you know, for different reasons. And like in the end, it just ended up being Meharry as being like the only African-American.
Right.
You
know, right. I think that was his view of having. And he actually, you know, he never used the word black, by the way. He always would say Negro. That was what he would do. And he always talked about the Negroes going to school. And, you know, I needed to do that and be, and literally I was actually ended up being the first man in my family to be go to college and then become a physician. So he actually was the person who really put it in my head, you know, because I was kind of like directed in that way very early.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. He had the foresight.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's good that it was kind of like instilled in you from early on. So did you feel like that kind of influenced you in school to like kind of, you know, get on the grades and study?
Well, I think it you know, of course, you know, when you get younger, you go awry, right?
That's definitely.
You don't always follow directions. But that was always in my head. And I was just fortunate. I'll give you a story about something very interesting about decision making, right? because I ended up being very good in school, and I ended up getting a lot of scholarships. And I originally was to go to Howard University. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, I had like this huge panic attack. It was just unbelievable because I'd not been out of Cleveland. So I ended up having been in a special program for talented kids at Case Western Reserve University. So I said, okay, I'm not going to go to Howard. I literally went over to Case Western Reserve University. They knew me because I'd been in the programs, and I was admitted within a week. And that changed my whole thing. It was incredible. You know, and my fear at the time of going to Howard was probably like a separation anxiety or something where I didn't want to leave Cleveland. I didn't feel mature enough or whatever. And it landed me at Case Western Reserve, and that's where I went to college. And I think if something else had happened, I may not have had, you know, what happened to me now. I think that that panic attack or whatever led me somewhere else. And also I met my wife there, at the time. So that's the way I went. I went from a very nice family, a great grandparents, a grandma and mom. And I kind of got directed by my grandpa for medicine. And then it really happened, you know, which is kind of amazing.
Dr. Collins, did you have a lot of support in the community in your efforts? Like your high school, were there guidance counselors, were there other people in the sciences, African-Americans that, you know, or people that looked like you that were really supporting you at that stage?
No, I didn't. But I did tell you, I had a great high school counselor. She actually jacked me up, and I'll tell you how she did it. Because she could see I was, you know, you're having one of those teenage periods. Mm-hmm. And she'd say, you know, you are a National Merit Scholar. You're sitting here at number 14 in the class. As she said, this was on my junior year. She said, I have no idea why you're not higher than that. So she kind of put the screws on me and told me I was lazy, and she just jacked me up. I ended up graduating fourth, right?
Oh, wow.
I went from 42 to 4.
Wow.
Wow. So people, and I said that they were not a people of color either. She was a white counselor, but she sort of knew what I could do. And that gave me a little bit of confidence that she kind of took the time to address whatever I was going through at that time and kind of move me along. There's another doctor in Cleveland. I met a doctor. My first only black doctor after that was named Dr. Jackson. And he had a clinic there. I remember he let me come to his office once. So between her and meeting Dr. Jackson was enough for me to kind of get my act together. Because, you know, I had that, you know, that 18-year-old crisis thing going on for sure, you know.
Yeah. But to see someone, like, to have someone, like, you know, believe in you, especially someone who doesn't look like you, and then also see someone who does look like you doing it, that's awesome. Yeah. That's like you said, that's just what you need, basically, at that time. So,
yeah, I needed that direction. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's my kind of the experience. And one of the things that happened at Case Western Reserve, it was very competitive. And I met my wife there. I have to give her some props here, because she kind of brought me along, because she was pre-med as well. So this is almost a spiritual thing, how she was placed in my life at that point when I was that young. I was only 19 years old, and she had the exact same thing. We were going to do the same thing. So that's how that happened. It was amazing to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so through that lazy period, my wife kind of stepped in, you know, my future wife, and then I'm my wife. And so, you know, you kind of got to pull yourself together. I want to describe all the stuff that you can do in the first year of college. I don't need to review that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, though. But like you said, yeah, people are putting your life for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And she was on it. She was on point. I could only imagine. Like, there were no games. You had to step your game up.
You know her, right? You know her. Yeah. And so that was sort of the course, and then I decided I stayed out, so I had a 5-year break between, medical school and college. In that time, we were married, we established a home. Then we both decided that we were going to do the medicine thing, and everything sort of worked out as far as the admissions process. So that's how it happened for us. And it was a blessing in a way that things really worked out like we had planned. It just doesn't, her family was incredibly supportive. And my family as well. So that's how you can have two children, because we had two children, during that time period. And our families kind of really kicked it up and supported us for that, to do that. We're both doctors. We're both first doctors in the family.
Oh, that's awesome. And you guys did it together. That's
so
great.
Yeah.
That's so great. Now, you went to med school, obviously, and so tell us, how did you kind of choose what you wanted to, go do residency in? And what were you interested in before medical school?
Well, initially, I was interested in pediatrics. And then when I finished medical school, I got into a residency program at Henry Ford Hospital for Internal Medicine. And also, at the time, the math had worked so differently. I actually had gotten a position at Washington University in St. Louis. Oh, and they were trying to get me to switch between Henry Ford and Washington. And then Jack and I said we just couldn't suddenly just go from Ohio to Missouri. So we decided that we were going to stay, and I stayed at Henry Ford. So I started off in internal medicine. And what made the difference is that I was in a primary care track, which had a 3-month block on psychiatry. So I ended up liking the psychiatry more than I did the internal medicine. So that's how, you go in, in retrospect, you go in thinking one thing, but your experiences through medicine have you changed.
That's right.
Yeah. So I ended up coming down to University of Cincinnati for adult psychiatry. Then the child thing came back in. So I did a fellowship at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center with children.
So I
did a full circle there. I ended up, working back with kids again.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
And that was the thing I want to spend a little time on this decision here, because so I ended up here in, Cincinnati, which I didn't want to, but I ended up here only because it ended up being the best place for raise kids. Then while working, I worked in psychiatry. I did a variety of things. One person in student affairs at UC College of Medicine said, "It looks like you have a temperament to maybe work with the medical students." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, they seem to like you or whatever." So the next thing I knew, the dean of the school called me up, the medical school, and said that we want you to maybe split your UC job up and do something in the dean's office. So let's just try to get you to do something there. Then that's why I got there and noticed that the minority medical students are kind of driving this process, because they were trying to get some additional support there for themselves. And what was striking, and Dr. Howard, you may not remember this, but this was back before your time, back in the 90s. It had a fairly large classes, but absolutely no support for them, like zero. And so I found like all kinds of things going on that they were all stressed out, just like I was. Mm-hmm. Being in an institution that was, predominantly of one race, and they were just stressed out beyond imagination. And there was a lot of academic stuff that was going awry. So
you created the support.
Yeah. So it needed some support. So again, you're talking about things happening. This just happened like that. Someone saw me in another area and thought that I could maybe be a benefit to some other students. So that's how I got connected to student affairs.
And that's great.
I think it'd be so easy. You know, if you're doing what you train to do, what you love to do, you're working with the kids, you're pediatric psychiatrist at one of the top hospitals in the nation, and then someone asks you to come over here and do something maybe that you're not used to, or like what led you to do that? You kind of touched on that earlier when you talked about how you remember being in medical school and needing that support.
Was that the main driver there? Yeah, I think that ended up, you know, at then I was kind of experiencing the same thing as like a new faculty member, right? Because, you know, psychiatry had, you know, only had ever like one Black psychiatrist in the whole department. Mm-hmm. And so I was really dealing with whatever on my level. And then I realized that there were people in worse shape than me because they were students. And if they didn't get finished with what they were doing, they would not be where I was at that point. So I said, yeah, I think I could do this. Wow. You know, I said, so let me try to develop something. And I did. And then, you know, a partner in crime was Dr. Kenneth Davis, mm-hmm. Who and I were thinking the same way, because he was another faculty member who felt that we needed to do a better job to support the minority medical students in school. And the thing, and being in that hat now, There were a lot of things happening. It just wasn't, you know, like, you know, Dr. Howard mentioned that he was getting married, but there were a lot of other things that were going on in students' lives too. People were getting left. They were, you know, not having a good relationship. Their parents were sometimes overwhelming them. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, you know, when you're at that level in school, your parents divorcing or getting on your nerves is not a good position for you to be in. Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. And sometimes being first generation people, our families don't understand the intensity that we're dealing with, and they don't know when to back off.
That's true.
And so I found a variety of things because of my nature and my training, I could kind of help the students get through as well.
That's awesome.
So that's how it worked. It's almost like it's just like a spiritual thing in a way, because I was kind of called to do that, mm-hmm. and then it worked out.
Hey, listen, and you weren't afraid. You know, it sounds like, you know, one salient point that when we talk to folks who have accomplished their dreams, they weren't afraid to pivot. And you started out in internal medicine and took a different direction. And man, I'm happy you did. And me and my colleagues and people that have graduated from there, I'm just so thankful that you created that support that we needed. I needed. I mean, yeah. I think I told you, Saad, in my one of the first few podcasts, my first round of exams bombed them. Was not used to bombing anything. I was mortified.
Yeah.
I had Dr. Collins' number. I called him. I said, I'm so sorry, I'm embarrassing you. I promise you I'll be better. I was saying two or three words, man, but it didn't matter because he was encouraging, he was there, and he was able to listen to me. I called this man when I thought about dropping out of radiology, and he's always been there.
I said, no, don't do that.
No. Yeah. I have so much respect for what you did, and being, you know, spiritually led and being there for us, it's wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome, man! So those are great stories. I mean, we've heard so many stories about you, so it's great that like you're actually here telling us about everything. You know, from your standpoint. So, can you just tell us like what was when you first got like kind of appointed in that position? What was the first like little thing that you did to just kind of help somebody out? Do you remember?
It was just a couple things. I mean, I had to really like
this from the ground up. You're building this thing.
I had to figure out not to be the bad person. Okay. But what I mean by that, sometimes you have to deliver bad news, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of to figure out how to give news, but also how to come up with a plan for them. Those exams were coming like one after another. So if the students were anxious and having exams, that was always a problem. So I tried to have some kind of something before an exam, meaning some social things, some food, something to get people kind of stabilized so they can go into a good idea. So I had to think of things that we could do to support, but also help them problem solve too. So that was some of the first things I really had to do. And at that time in the night, it was just a lot of crisis, and the curriculum was just so inflexible at that point. That I had to help students learn how to manage those things. The 2000s were different, but the 90s for sure were something else.
You probably felt like you were kind of pushing up against the wall because you knew what you needed to do, and then, you know, the curriculum is not flexible enough for you to do it.
And the other thing was that they ended up, and you may, if you have the evolution of it, because I'm not in the office now, I'm certainly doing other things, but they actually decided to put money where their mouth is, meaning the University of Cincinnati actually funded, got better and better and better with time. Mm. And that was necessary to take care of, some of the things that the students needed. There were, and I remember some of the stuff. I can remember, I don't want to break anybody's confidentiality, but it's just like, please don't have an argument with your significant other before you're taking an exam. I mean, there it was things like that that were happening that they had no, help with or something. What I mean. There were all kinds of things that would happen, but it was all meant to help them get better and get out of graduate and be doctors. I think that during the time that Kenneth Davis and I were kind of doing our thing, and I have to mention Dr. Walter Bowers is someone else who was helpful as well. More students, the graduation rate increased, right? Mm-hmm. That was the deal that we wanted, making sure that everybody that entered graduated. At one point, it was far lower, and there were many students dismissed. But we were able to get up to over 99% graduation rate in the time that we were there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think what you were able to do, you were able to create community, right? Once you connected us all, you had those social events and you got us together with some of the upperclassmen to give those words of encouragement, you created community. And I know, and I hear it amongst other folks that went to predominantly white medical universities, once you found the people and you got together and you could support one another, it was onward and upward.
It makes such a difference.
Definitely. That's amazing that like over 99%, I mean, that looks good for everyone. That looks good for you. That looks good for the school. It looks good for the students, to be able to graduate that high. That makes sense. So you were super involved, obviously, in picking the students who would come as well. So tell us, how did that process go, and what type of things were you looking for in the students who, were applying to Cincinnati at the time?
Well, this is the part that I just want to spend a minute on. It's going to, you mentioned the frustration. With this recent change, with this affirmative action thing, I have no idea how medical school admissions are going to go, right? Mm. And before we actually had some programs that we call pipeline programs, right? Meaning that we had some summer programs and things like that in which we were introduced to students. And I would actually keep up with some students who I thought were talented, who would be good students for UC. All that's gone. All of it's gone. Mm-hmm. So we actually had an admissions process which actually gave you some props here for being a student that we already had contact with, right? We admitted a lot of students who we already had mentored and brought in through another way. All that's gone now. So that was part of what we did to have programs. Actually, we had a college program and we had a high school program and a junior high program. There was one young lady, Dr. Clark. Do you remember her, Clizia? You remember her?
Yes, I do.
I knew Clicia all the way through high school to college, all the way through.
Wow.
So that's what I mean, is that there were things. So that was part of my job, is identifying students, to present them to the admissions board and kind of prepare them. I would actually help get them, with their AMCAS and all that to make sure they had it ready to go forward. So we were able to expand into the community and do that. So the admissions part, now I have no idea what they're going to do. I recently had a call about someone who was concerned because recently, you know, with this affirmative action thing, they had to take away all that information that you would have. And sometimes people who are not in the majority, people who are in the majority don't recognize when they have a minority candidate in front of them based on paper.
Nope.
And so that's the kind of thing I'm kind of worried about now. And I actually may go back onto the admissions committee again, even
Please
though
do.
I retired.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be a need. So admissions was a big part of it, but I was part of their pipeline program, and those things are non-existent now.
And that, you know, that makes me angry because I was doing some work and I saw in 2021 that the Association of American Medical Colleges put out that only of all the vascular interventional radiologists, only 2.9% of them identify as Black.
Yeah.
And in radiology, it's only 2.7%.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Yeah, it's not.
You know, for a population that makes up 12-13% of the population, that's not enough.
Yeah.
You know? And we know the outcomes when African-Americans have African-American doctors. So when you take away those sort of efforts to try and bring up those numbers, what do we, you know, that's upsetting.
It's really a worry of already having low numbers, right? And then this happens. And so it's really going to be a quite interesting year. I had recently met a young woman, a friend of mine's daughter, very competitive for medical school, but her and I kind of sat down. I told her how she needed to work on this essay. Because I said, you know, for example, most people, you have to know what alpha, kappa, alpha is, right? Or your kappas or beta or whatever. You need to know these sororities or whatever. And all people don't know that, right?
No.
You hope that someone knows that you see Spelman College or Morehouse University down there, that someone picks that up to say that may be a potential minority candidate. So that's where we're at. So I'm, you know, I think more work is to be done. Yeah, it's things like that I think we have to work on now.
That makes sense. I mean, you're asking people who have like no, you know, like they don't have any like intention or like they don't have a need to know. So that information just can go right past them. So
that's true.
That's tough. And like you said, the pipelines, I mean, made it easy because like you basically like, you know, follow somebody for a few years and could tell whether they were going to be like a good candidate or not, because it wasn't like a 20-minute interview. You followed over like multiple years.
Right. You know, Yeah.
That makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, again, you know, we really appreciate everything that you've done. And we hope that like, you know, people who like were mentored by you and, you know, inspired by you as well, like, and, you know, take the initiative to also, you know, get involved in an admission process. Cause I mean, just from like your work, you can see like everything that you've done. I mean, your career is your career. And then also you've inspired so many people to even go into medicine and have a career in medicine as well, which is just an amazing concept.
That's right.
I think that's the reach back part a little bit, because you can do small things. You don't have to be huge. You know, Jackie and I are not just huge folks. We just ordinary people. But I think in the area that you can help somebody with, you always can do that. And, you know, you don't get so big in your career where you kind of forget that someone needs assistance, even, you know, just a small word of encouragement or calling somebody to help someone get through something works out. So I've always been like that. And again, I've been blessed to be in this profession.
You've been flexible too. I think that's the other thing. Like you aren't too like rigid to like not, you know, understand that like, you know, when it's time to bend, it's time to bend. And it, you know, it bent everything went well for you. And that's awesome. So
Dr. C, I gotta ask you, give me the most difficult thing you faced over your career thus far and how you overcame it or how you're working through it.
Well, okay. Well, the one of the more difficult things, you know, and I'm finishing my career, right? I'm retired and I'm doing other stuff now. But I think, you know, being in such a large healthcare system, there were several people, including myself, who were pretty well credentialed. Not only am I, you know, got an MD, I also have a master's in business administration. Mm. And one of the things that I noticed was that within the university setting, everybody else was getting these jobs and things. And, you know, so as a minority, either you get skipped over a lot. That's my point. You could have all the experience you want, and you can be as bright as you want, the right credentials, but you find somebody that's been working, you know, 1 year less than you or whatever, got the job. It's really kind of amazing. So that's been my more frustrating thing. Mm-hmm. I think I was spiritually and whatever set to handle stuff, but, you know, working, and you don't always get looked at, you know, you don't mm-hmm. always get considered. And that's kind of shocking that it still goes in these big medical systems. So, absolutely. Yeah, that was my more stressful thing, and probably why I quit work early. I mean, I worked until 65. I'm 70 now. So,
oh no, you put your time in.
I put my time in.
But also, talking about the spiritual aspect, I think it's just really interesting that, like, you know, students, like when you were like an attending, went and found out. You know, found you out and made sure that you were, you know, they kind of recommended you to like go to the dean's office, which is, you know, you basically were like asked to do it, which is also kind of like goes with the spiritual connection you were saying. So that's,
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Things work out.
Well, so tell us, so what would you tell, you know, someone who's like struggling in, you know, undergrad or high school or med school to like make it through? What would you tell them to like help them, make it happen for themselves?
Well, you know, I think my message is maybe different. I don't know now compared to this modern age. I'm talking about social media for a minute, right? Because for some reason, like my grandpa was able to talk to me and told me it was going to be very hard work, right? And I knew that. I got that. But now, when I talk to the young folks, it seems that they don't recognize that you have to do a lot of work to be a doctor. It's not like real quick. And the delayed gratification thing. So I have to get my new message out about how it is, how you handle this. It's not going to happen immediately. You don't become a good doctor quickly. It takes a while. And you have to prepare a lot. And that's why I'm struggling with how to give that message that it's a wonderful career. And you can do many, many different things other than direct clinical work, but you got to spend the time. And that's why I'm trying to figure out how to message that.
Oh, well, yeah. You're on the same wavelength as we are, because we're trying to figure out the same thing.
Yeah.
You talk about the years of training it requires to be a doctor. You see the gloss over.
Exactly.
The attention's like, I'm on to my phone now.
It's not a 30-second career. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so I'm not giving up, but I'm just trying to, and I do have some students I'm mentoring now to get them, you know, beyond that. But that's the message that I have, that it is a wonderful career, but it is just a delayed gratification. And then when, you know, I say, and I always include my wife on this, I really didn't delay anything. I got everything that I asked for. It just didn't happen immediately, right?
Right.
The kids, the career, it all happened.
Yeah, no, it did. It did. And like, and life is long, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's nice to like feel like you've accomplished something that, like, you know, a lot of people can't necessarily accomplish, you know? So I think there's also like a certain amount of pride that goes into, like, you know, I did train for this amount of time and then I did work. And, you know, like, I think it's important to kind of recognize that as well, because sometimes it is, you know, the journey is long, but then the journey is fulfilling too.
Yeah.
You know, like when you look back on it, be like, you know, I did do that, you know? So I agree totally. So we'll find them. We're looking for the youngins who are ready to do it. They're out there.
We're working. I'm working too.
That's wonderful.
We'll find them. We really appreciate you making the time, you know, to talk to us, and just absolute legend, and all the stories have been amazing. We really appreciate it.
Okay, well, I'm glad I could be of help. to y'all.
This was awesome. Help to everyone, and big help to Cincinnati too. You turned it into an HBCU. That's the joke I've been making.
God always says that, you know.
It's true. But no, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for making the time. And everyone, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, stay low and keep firing.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.
We just never felt like there were someone documenting like long form of like African Americans going into medicine, and we feel like it's important to kind of document these stories as well.
It's important. It's so important. Yeah.